Welcome to the New Books Network.
Confounding, exhilarating, and contagious. Emotions matter, and so does applying emotional intelligence. Welcome to Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight, the podcast where emotions rule. Whatever the topic, how do hearts and minds collide? Find out with your host, a college professor turned globe-trotting EQ entrepreneur. His mission? Each week, Dan joins prominent authors in decoding how emotions drive outcomes and make people tick. Now, on to the show.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me for the 53rd episode of my podcast, Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight. The series appears here on the New Books Network, which has as its motto, sharing knowledge so people can thrive. Today's topic is Women in Art and Life Are Over It. I'm joined by Nicole Tersigny. She is the author of Men to Avoid in Art and Life. The publisher is Chronicle Books. Nicole is, and she describes herself as, a comedic writer, experienced in improv comedy and women's advocacy. She lives in Metro Detroit with her husband, daughter, and most importantly, two dogs as well. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I think we're going to have a lot of fun here. So go ahead and give us a brief overview of this book. How did this thing come into existence and what are we talking about?
Of course. Yeah. So the book is called Men to Avoid in Art and Life. And it is basically a meme book, which takes classic paintings and pairs them with modern captions to kind of illustrate the different types of frustrating men that we encounter in our daily lives. And they're broken into five different categories of men. There's the mansplainer, the concern troll, the comedian, the sexpert, and the patronizer. And that book, the book came about because, you know, just my own experiences living in the world as a woman, as a creative person, as a comedian. And it started as a Twitter thread, actually, this same, like, pairing the modern captions with the classic paintings. And it took off. It went viral. I had an agent reach out to me and say, you know, would you be interested in making this into a book? And I said, heck yes, let's do it.
That's a nice, easy route.
Yeah, it was. It was very, very lightning in a bottle kind of thing. It was quite an experience.
Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. So these five types of men, I mean, there are surely probably more than five types that you've found frustrating, yeah, annoying, and maybe whatever else. How did you finally settle on these five? We'll go through each of them in a moment, but just how did you get to those five?
Well, so it was suggested to me to come up with around five to give the book some structure. And so that's how the five came about. And I just kind of tried to divvy them up as best I could into different categories. Obviously, there's a lot of overlapping, like, you know, mansplaining is such a common element in the whole book, really.
Sure.
And they're all very patronized. So it all kind of bleeds together. But just to help give it some structure, I came up with this variety of men.
Okay. Well, I just got curious. So I went online, I started Googling and saying, can I find any survey data on, you know, types of men women want to avoid and so forth. I did not find that readily. I did find one article from a woman named Lauren Skirbin, mm-hmm, rather, from 2015. Here are her five types, and I don't know if you have any reaction to them or not, and okay, how they play with yours. Two of them seem to involve abuse of drugs and alcohol. Mm. One was the Jekyll and Hyde drunk, mm-hmm, versus just the quiet alcoholic. There was the cheater manipulator, the controller, and the commitment phobe.
Ooh, yeah.
If you expanded to seven, would any of those made it into your book?
Yeah, I feel like that is good advice. You definitely want to avoid those types of men as well. That's a little darker.
It is a little darker, granted, yes.
It's a little harder to find humor in the drug abuser person, you know, but yes, definitely avoid all of those types of men.
Yes. So let's go through them one by one. So yeah, mansplaining, you said, is maybe, you know, it's the first category and one that could probably, you know, carry through the entire book in some manner of speaking.
For sure.
So you chose the artwork. Yes. And you wrote the captions, and you can maybe give an example or two of your favorites from the mansplainer section.
Sure.
but just, take us down the road of the mansplainer a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. So the mansplainer is, he's the man who explains things to you in a condescending way, usually. And it's something that you are well-versed in. You are maybe an expert in. This is unsolicited, unwanted feedback and advice, which is key to mansplaining. This is not, it's not someone asking for help. And so one example from the book that I think perfectly sums up the mansplainer is this man who's speaking to a woman and he says, "Let me explain your lived experiences to you." So
yes,
that puts a little button on it.
So in facial coatings, I'm an expert at looking at people's facial expressions and knowing what emotions they show. So I apply this, as I've done to all sorts of artwork, including being in the Rijksmuseum with the head of the collection and going through and looking at the Rembrandts and other paintings. Mm-hmm. And he would give me the background and then I would say what I saw on the people's faces. So can you guess what? There are seven emotions you can pick up from facial coding. Those are happiness, surprise. Then you have anger, fear, sadness, disgust, and contempt. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine which of those emotions maybe I saw more so that, because I went through and I actually facially coded every woman's face that I could reasonably read in the book and compared each of the five sections. So there was an emotion that actually distinctly stood out in the mansplainer section based on the paintings you chose. Can you imagine of those seven, which one it might have been?
That's so interesting. First of all, I love that you did that. Is it contempt?
That's going to come up later on. Okay. It's actually anger.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, and I thought it was interesting because anger as an emotion can be about, I want to make progress, but also I want to be in control of my own destiny. So you're now telling me you know my life better than I do.
Right.
Which is probably not true.
Right. Chances are not true.
Yes.
Very frustrating.
So, yes, very frustrating indeed. So let's go to the next one. This is the concern troll. How would you define that and maybe a favorite example?
Yeah, so the concern troll uses faux concern for you to kind of undermine and belittle you. So like, for example, I agree with what you're saying, but your tone or your language is off-putting to people, that kind of thing. In the book, I think a great one is this man who says, when I said that you needed to lose weight, I was only thinking of your health, you know? So it's like, pretend concern for you to make you feel little.
Sure. And, I love the example. And can you imagine which of those seven emotions applies in this case? There is a getting pattern.
Is it also anger?
No, it's the one you chose last time. Oh, it's contempt. Yeah. And actually from your definition, that makes total sense because condescension is really what contempt's about. It's that smirk at the corner of the mouth. I find you beneath me. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? It's a contagious emotion. They all are.
Right.
So if you find me beneath you, I can return the favor.
Yeah.
I can find you beneath me for your patronizing ways.
Yeah.
So that's that one. Let's go on to the next category. This is the comedian.
The comedian, yes. So the comedian is just convinced of his funniness, first of all. He gets offended when you don't laugh at his jokes, which are, you know, oftentimes very lazy and tired, sexist, racist jokes. He's the guy that always tells you, you know, lighten up. You need to get a sense of humor. It's just jokes. That kind of man.
Sure.
One example from the book is this man is talking to a woman and he says, "I was only kidding when I asked if those baby buffets had names. You don't have to call me a Weasley little turd. It hurt my feelings." So kind of dish it out, but can't take it.
Yeah. Thin skin, but a bully themselves.
Yes.
Okay. My favorite sexual but not sexual joke might be actually from Roseanne Barr, who said a woman reaches her sexual peak in life about the same time that her husband realizes he has a favorite chair. Just indicative of the fact that the two sexes are never on the same page, it seems.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. So that kind of sets us up for the next one, which is the sexpert. So I think the definition's pretty obvious, but I'll let you put it in your own words.
Sure. The sexpert is the man, the, you know, cis man who thinks he knows your body better than you do. Pretty clearly. And then one of the jokes actually in that section is this man saying, "Let me explain something to you about the female body."
Yeah, so we're back to mansplaining, but now we got a sexual angle basically. So there was no pattern for the comedian necessarily in the women's expressions, but there is once again one for the sexpert. On the women's faces, as the sexpert is patronizingly going on, what do you think it might be out of those five emotions?
Is it also contempt?
No, it's actually fear.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the anxiety, discomfort, you're invading my space verbally, you know, God forbid it's going to follow with physical manifestations.
That is so interesting because a lot of those paintings are men in these women's business and them like very clearly leaning away or trying to get away.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to the overall patterns in a moment. But yes, I definitely saw that. It includes in particular the eyes wide, because when the eyes mm-hmm. go wide, you are taking in information because you have to read your environment.
Right.
You have to know what's going on. There's a wonderful first stanza from a poem by Wallace Stevens where he said, "A duchess is not a duchess 100 yards from the carriage. Women understand this."
Ooh, yeah.
Which is to say men often don't.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah. So one more. We got the patronizer.
Okay. Yes, the patronizer. And again, they're all very patronizing. But so the patronizer uses your emotions as weapons against you. He, you know, makes you feel small to make himself feel big, that kind of character. One of the paintings in there that I really like is this man who says, "I can't talk to you if you're going to get hysterical." And the woman is just deadpan. Like she's not hysterical. She's just staring at him.
Okay.
So.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And there is a pattern here too as well. So everyone but the comedian has a pattern. Can you guess which of the emotions it is in this case?
I'm going to say contempt again, just because I want that for all of them. I just want them to be over it.
You're not far off. When I look at happiness, I actually look at four gradations of happiness, because a joyful expression is when the muscle around the eye relaxes and you get the twinkle in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kind of the bargain basement, the Filene's bargain basement of happiness is what I call acceptance. It's the really slight smile. And that's what I had in this case.
Oh, yeah.
So they took some pleasure, you know, muted as it was, they took some pleasure in making the woman feel small while they mm-hmm. therefore got to feel bigger.
Yeah.
But the slight smile, just from my experience over 20 years, does often go with contempt. Mm-hmm. It was somewhat notable that there was some contempt, but it was particularly the smiles that I noticed.
That is super interesting. What a fun exercise.
It was. And there was now, just more broadly, there was a pattern for the women and a pattern for the guys. And we haven't discussed the guys' expressions so far. Can you imagine, particularly vis-a-vis the women, what they showed? There was one emotion they definitely showed more.
Contempt.
Well, you're nothing if not consistent. It is actually happiness. They enjoyed being a comedian, even if the person receiving the so-called humor did not. They enjoyed being the concern troll. They enjoyed being the mansplainer, the sexpert, the patronizer. And the women, in turn, and this takes us out of the realm of comedy a bit, but, you know, life is as it is.
Yeah.
Actually, the distinctive pattern across all of them outside of the ones I've already raised is more sadness.
Yeah.
You know, therefore, the opposite of happiness. And sadness can be, you know, I feel forlorn. I feel disappointed by these men I'm hanging out with against my wishes in some cases. That you're just despondent. And so the eyes were closed. They were downcast. The head was downcast. There was also kind of an unfocused gaze off into the eyes.
Yeah.
Which is characteristic of sadness. It was pretty prevalent. I mean, more so than any of the categories I gave you in many ways, it would be that. Although, again, you know, there was certainly anger with the mansplainer. There was certainly contempt with the concern troll. There was certainly fear with this expert. But that was a real marked difference.
That's so interesting to me, too, because these paintings mostly were painted by men. So I'm wondering, like, what were they? I mean, obviously, I see in them what I want to see. I take my own life and my own experiences and translate them into paintings. But I'm wondering what the original intent was. If they're, as you say, they have the sadness in the women, and then they have the happiness on the man. Like, what were they going for? I wonder, what were they trying to show us?
And even if they captured the expression accurately of the sitters, or projected it, did they really fully understand,
right,
in our modern, more feminist terms, what was going on here?
Or they're just like, oh, that's just how women are.
Yeah. So let me jump to something else. I was curious. I know from doing my own book called First Blush, where I used eye tracking and facial coding to get at people's intuitive reactions to famous art. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's really difficult to make the choices. There are so many great, interesting paintings out there.
So many.
How did you settle on the ones that you did? And I noticed in particular in the art credits, a lot of them were from the Met.
Yes.
And quite a few from the Rijksmuseum. So those two seem to predominate the list a bit. But how did you choose the paintings you could? Because, boy, there are a lot of options.
Oh, I know. So my process for picking the paintings was... We are so fortunate right now because museums like the Met and the Rijksmuseum, they have their whole databases online, and they're super easily searchable. You can search through for public domain, open access. And then, you know, I would just go through there, all the stuff that was free for me to use. And I basically scrolled through art until my eyeballs bled. I would save any that looked like potentially I could work with them. And then I would put them in a document and try and finagle a joke around, you know, what I saw happening or what kind of joke I usually it was around what was happening in the painting. I rarely started with a type of joke I wanted to make.
Sure.
And then, you know, I just went from there, whatever I could make work the best. I still have, you know, I'm still doing them on Instagram because I have so many that did not get used in the book that are just in my documents folder that I've been going through.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll have to link up on Instagram because I'd love to follow those. Did you have a favorite example from the book overall? I mean, we kind of hit on each by category, but is there one that was the biggest chuckle, or the caption just came super quick, or whatever criteria?
Yes, the one that makes me laugh the most, that made me laugh when I wrote it, is one of this man. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but he's standing next to a statue of a woman, and he has his hand on the statue, and he says, "You're not like other girls." It's just so perfectly. It makes me laugh because they say that all the time, and it's very frustrating because it's not a compliment. What you're telling me is you don't value women and girls when you're saying, "Oh, you're different than them. You're better. You're a good one."
So they inadvertently reveal themselves.
When it's like I think other women and other girls are amazing. I don't mind being compared to them. So that with the statue is always makes me laugh.
Okay. And if you had some contemporary or more contemporary artwork in the book, was there any of those? Maybe these are the things that are going on Instagram now, but you want to throw in maybe a more contemporary example that you had fun with?
You know, I don't have any contemporary because I didn't want to find some that were amazing, that I love, that I fell in love with and had like a perfect joke for, and then not be able to use it. I only looked in public domain, which, as you know, is all like very old, very old artwork, all stuff that was accessible to me because I didn't want to have to deal with that at all, you know?
Okay. Well, I had mentioned to you when we talked before going on the air that the Roy Lichtenstein, you know, yes, cartoon-driven artwork, including like In the Car, which kind of evoked Mad Men for me.
Yes.
Might be fun if Roy's estate would simply agree to allow you to do your thing.
Yeah, I looked at that one, and you're right, it is very Mad Men. So I picture him like, you know, obviously calling her doll or some sweetheart doll. Something about how, you know, she's probably nervous about his driving, and he's like, "Don't worry, doll. Cars are like women. You know, you tell them what to do, and they just respond," or something like that. You know, very sexist, old school Mad Man is exactly right when you say that about Mad Men.
Yeah, no, I think that's you're on your way to a good caption there. Again, if only Roy will allow. So I have to ask, out of your own life and experiences, you have these five types. Is there one that you think women should most urgently avoid?
I think, you know, one that I think is maybe the most dangerous type can be the concern troll. Just because, and it's not just men who concern troll. It's a lot of people that concern troll. And it's something that's really hard to spot sometimes, especially when it's someone that you love or, you know, that you think respects you in your life. And then you hear this feedback from them. Sometimes you can internalize it and take it in and just be like, yes, you're right. I should change this about myself because you love me. And if you're saying this, then it must be true.
Well, that's interesting because that's where the women showed more contempt. So fortunately, it seemed like they had deflected it back onto the men rather than feel contempt for themselves, which is a good thing. And I might mention a factoid you'd find interesting. Mm-hmm. Contempt is the most reliable indicator that a marriage will fail.
They've actually
used facial coding at the Love Lab at the University of Washington, Seattle. Gottman, who's an expert on facial coding and marriage counseling. And I think they had 95% accuracy from 5 minutes of videotape when the couples showed pronounced contempt for one another, that that marriage was over and done for.
That makes so much sense. If you don't, you know, respect somebody, how can you have a relationship with them?
Exactly. It's just like in a political debate, the first thing you want to do is take away the trust factor for the other candidate because then nothing that person says in the debate will supposedly have credence with the voters, you know, watching
Right.
on.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's a really fundamental. And I've found over the years of my research, contempt is the hardest one for a person or a brand, for instance, to come back from. Because you've made a judgment. It's called an emotion, mm-hmm. but it's really an attitudinal assessment.
Yeah.
that you've arrived at in lots of ways. So is there, you're doing the ones on Instagram. Is there going to be a second version of this book or a follow-on? Or what's next for Nicole?
Yes. So I've got some fun stuff coming up with this book, some calendars and things coming out. But I just announced that I'm doing a second book that it's not around men. It's actually the same style with the art and the captions, but it's going to be around female friendships, gal pals.
Okay.
A little more lighthearted, fun kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, lighthearted is good. We've got enough bad news in the world. I did. Yeah. It's funny because when you mentioned that and I started Googling and saying, can I find other interesting paintings with men and women interactions? Google didn't do a terribly good job in selecting down to a narrower fit. And so they gave me a lot that just showed women together, including from the pre-Raphaelite painters.
Yes, there's a lot of material there. I'm excited to dig in and come up with some good stuff.
That's cool. So any from this exercise, any last words of wisdom for listeners on how to navigate life that you've learned from doing the book, from your own experiences, observations, anything you want to throw in the hopper here?
I think just, you know, be confident in yourself. don't let anybody tell you something that you know to be true. That's not, you know, against what you know to be true about you.
Don't let them gaslight you, in other words.
Don't let them gaslight you. Yeah. And you know, in responding to them, a lot of times you just got to do what you feel safe doing. Sometimes that means calling them out. Sometimes it means making a joke. And sometimes it means just letting it slide. Sometimes you just have to in the moment to get through it. And, you know, I respect however people respond to this. You got to do your own thing.
Sure. Makes sense to me. Yeah. So this has been episode number 53. It's called Women in Art and Life Are Over It. My guest, Nicole Tersigny. She is the author of Men to Avoid in Art and Life. If you've enjoyed today's episode, and I sure hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, please give it a rating or review on iTunes. You can check out other episodes by going to my company's website at the obligatory 3 W's, sensorylogic.com, or go to the New Books Network. My series is under the special series programming. Finally, I like to end every episode with an appropriate epigram. When I started looking around, I started with mansplaining, and I came across 5 notable examples. One was actually from an interview done with Thomas Edison for Good Housekeeping magazine back in 1912. And it's a case almost of double mansplaining, because Edison is mansplaining that women don't have men's intellectual capability. And the man interviewing Edison is therefore going on to say, well, the female reader should not actually be offended by this comment, but he would allow them, they might be briefly annoyed. All of which ends with Edison coming back and saying, direct thought is not an attribute of femininity. Yeah, right. Until next time, be kind and stay safe.